light of the candle of his soul, and swam towards him. The fragments of a million frantic sendings skated over his perception, blasted into incomprehensible pieces by the warp storm and the wild temporal disruption it engendered, so that only the fear that propelled them was apparent. Something was coming for him. He felt it follow the trail of his being in the warp, sniffing at his essence. He did not have long. He concentrated harder. There was a purer presence moving out there, a holy presence, perhaps a focused major choir of his own kind. The thing was nearing. He should pull out, but he had to see. There was a light, lesser than the Astronomicon, but of the same purity, singing the same message over and over again. With growing wonder, Geron processed the message, decoding in warp as he received it. Relief flooded him, and joy. He sent a simple reply, blasted from his being with all the force of his soul, a simple composition, two word signs, and the badge of the chapter infused with great urgency. Save. Bah. And then the thing had him. Hadjin had been fifth sergeant of the second company of the Carmine Blades for a long time. Among his peers, he was a warrior of renown. He had skinned his first man long before the Death Games. He had fought on Haldroth at his father's side against men and beasts, both before the coming of the angels and his ascension to their heaven. Once his body had been charged and his loyalties switched from tribe to emperor, he had proved himself a dozen times over. When finally his carapace had been awarded in the flaying rite, he had not cried out at the priest's knife, and thereafter he had demonstrated his worthiness to wear the war suit within days. He had lived 400 years. He had known the Carmine Blades by the name of the Swords of Haldroth. He had been there the day the Redeemer of the Lost had come and changed their chapter forevermore, and that earned him as much awe as mistrust. Hadjin's skill with a blade was second to none. His brothers looked up to him, his commanders respected him, his enemies feared him. Yet he had never expected to become chapter master. Now he was. It was an office with a short tenure. There were 157 Carmine Blades left alive upon Baal Secundus. 800 of them had come to answer the call of Commander Dante. There had been much debating in the House of Long Bones as to whether to answer at all. Hadjin had said no, stating their loyalties to the Blood Angels were too new. But his was a belligerent chapter. Young blood outnumbered old blood, and the young blood did not remember the time before. Votes had been cast in favor of intervention. First Blood Khan, their master, had been bound by the will of his brothers. Nearly all of the Carmine Blades had come to Baal. And now Hadjin was First Blood, first among equals, but lord nonetheless. His was a small kingdom that grew smaller every day. "I apologize, Bringer of Dreams," he said, giving the old name, the one they had used before they had known it was Sanguinius who brought them their visions and not the wild gods of Haldroth, "that I do not feel the honor in my office that I should." He finished his prayer and returned to his vigil over the blasted land. The astropathic relay of the Blood Angels hid itself at the top of the world. Baal Secundus had no axial tilt, its seasons instead driven by the complicated series of eclipses imposed upon it by its brother and sister. At the pole, where the relay was located, neither day nor night ruled. A perpetual gloaming had the region under its spell. This was the Kingdom of Shadows. The mountains the relay occupied were small in height and extent, a geological afterthought of cracked brown rock. Arid boulder fields spread around the mountain's feet. Dirty ice, streaked with sand, skulked in the lee of large outcrops so the wind could not strip it away. It was a rough land grown recently rougher, for new angular shapes had joined the eroded stones, the corpses of hundreds of thousands of Tyranids. 49 times the Tyranids had thrown themselves at the astropathic relay. 49 times the Carmine Blades had repelled them. The base of its walls were choked with the dead. The rough camp of refugee mortals who had come begging for shelter was a pounded area of fabric tatters and metal scrap to the east. Spent ammunition casings were heaped high around the relay's autocannon turrets. Each assault had cost the Carmine Blades more of their brothers. Their ammunition dwindled, their officers were felled, their heroes slaughtered. The Carmine Blades did not falter in their duty. They understood the Sky Talkers must live. 49 times, until the void had opened up, exposing its guts, and the creatures had stopped coming. Hadjin watched. There was no movement on the ground. There had been none for many days. "First blood," Sergeant Konoko saluted his leader, right fist clanging on his left shoulder. "All is quiet in the south. The chimneys no longer belch their smoke. I see no ships in the void."
"You see no void," corrected Hadjin.
He jerked his helm's muzzle up at the flat mauve sky, where ribbons of gold moved in painful whorls.
"Is it over then, First Blood?"
"No,"
said Hadjin.
"It is not over. Something has changed."
"Heja," said Konoko. "You speak truthfully. When they attacked, they did so without sense. Have the Blood Angels won, do you think? Is this flatness in the sky their doing?"
"They are strange, but they are not sorcerers. Anyway, how could they have won? Could they truly accomplish that?"
said Hadjin.
"No. The sky is not the sky. It is a window onto the spirit lands. The change in the sky broke the mind of the Devourer. Warpcraft. A sorcerer's work."
Hadjin would have asked his librarians. They might have known. Or the Tech Marines. They had knowledge no others did. Learned on the planet of the machine priests. But they were all dead.
"That is not the end of something. It is a beginning. A bad one. But now we live by the angel's will," said Konoko.
They made fists and bashed their wrists together.
"By the angel's will. Then your orders, First Blood?"
Konoko bowed. They were lodge brothers, followers of the same totem. Konoko and he had jested with each other over a great deal, until yesterday. There was no friendly mockery in his bow. Konoko had only respect for him. Hadjin felt a pang of regret that it should be so.
"Have the men rest, repair their war gear as best they can. Go to the Vox station and see if you can raise anyone." "We have heard nothing from the other chapters on this world," said Konoko. "I try every third hour." "It does not follow. They are all dead," said Hadjin. "Find out, and bring me the Sky Talker. It is time they attempted their prayers again."
"I need not,"
Konoko pointed down the rampart.
"He is coming to you."
Hadjin turned round. Master Leto was indeed walking towards them. He was ailing. He staggered, his left shoulder hunched high.
"Something is wrong," said Hadjin.
He pushed past Konoko. His boots crunched on chunks of a Tyranid dead. Said Leta. He held out a clawed hand towards Hadjin.
He is...
His eyes were alight with unnatural fire, and his arms squirmed bonelessly.
"Tyranid evil," said Konoko.
He raised his bolter. Hadjin put out a hand to stop him firing.
"He is witch-touched."
He glanced at the sky.
"Did you make a prayer, Astropath?"
Leta nodded. He fell forward. Hadjin caught him. The Astropath's face was crawling, reshaping itself.
"He is a fool," said Konoko. "Something is trying to get out through his flesh. We should kill him now."
"Wait," commanded Hadjin. "Was that an answer?"
Leta nodded again.
"He is..."
He swallowed hard. His jaws clicked. His eyes were swimming, changing color.
"He is coming,"
he said.
"Who is coming, old man?"
said Hadjin, though he was at least 3 centuries older than the creature he held in his arms. Veins pulsed hard in the man's neck. Hadjin struggled to concentrate on his words. The human frothed at his mouth. White foam spilled from between his lips. He said. His back arched, his teeth clamped together. A monstrous growl issued from his throat. His flesh writhed under his robes.
"First Blood,"
said Konoko. He backed up, gun raised.
"Emperor, save you,"
Hadjin said. He slipped his knife from its scabbard into Leta's throat. Blood poured from his neck. Hadjin's mouth watered.
"Do not," warned Konoko. "It is unclean." "I was not going to."
Hadjin lowered Leta's corpse to the ground. "From respect." He looked at Leta thoughtfully.
"There is no more danger here."
"Who is coming?"
asked Konoko. He moved forward, gun still up, and prodded Leta's body with his foot. Hadjin looked to the sky.
"Who, indeed?"
Chapter 26. The Penitent's Due. Carbander fell through the hidden spaces between worlds. The occulted gears of creation rushed by him. In the machineries of being were the inner secrets of the universe displayed to him. The demon kin of Tzeentch would have damned a dozen eternities for a glimpse of what he saw, but Carbander did not care for knowledge. The things on display were valueless to him, and the wonders of infinity whirled by unappreciated. Carbander fell forever, and for no time at all, until a wave of change rippled out through the multidimensional space he infected, upsetting the delicate workings of infinite, interleaved universes. Carbander howled in triumph. The promised storm had been unleashed. Far from Baal, at Cadia, Abaddon the Despoiler achieved goals he had pursued since the Horus Heresy. Reality split as fault lines closed millions of years ago were rent aside. Isolated warp storms and anomalies spread their arms, reaching for the burning might of the warp. The Eye of Terror vomited its diabolical energies across the firmament. The raging storm it unleashed devoured tens of thousands of star systems. Millions of worlds were consumed. Races that had never known the wrath of man or the taint of chaos were expunged in an instant. Imperial worlds fell by the score. Many thousands not destroyed outright were plagued by hordes of demons, their psychers minds ripped open to allow the fell beings of the Empyrean to walk among mortal populations. A warp storm of a size not seen since the Emperor took to the Golden Throne raged across the breadth of the galaxy. A billowing wave of madness engulfed space, traveling far faster than time and distance should have allowed. In the Empyrean, the Astronomicon flickered and died. Rains of blood fell on terrified people on worlds thousands of light-years from the Cadian Gate. All creation rocked. In the no-spaces between realities, the rift was felt. In places far distant to the reality of man, strange beings dreamed of fire and blood. Old Night, a source of hazy myth and fear to the peoples of the 41st millennium, was reborn. Carbander roared joyously at its return. The demon recovered from his endless fall, beat his wings, and flew for a weakness in the fabric of all things. A single swipe of his axe split space-time, exploiting a fault line opened by the cicatrix maledictum. Carbander emerged into the material universe high over Baal Primus, as the rift split the sky and the roiling energies of chaos spread like a slick of burning promethium over the imperturbable depths of space. The red world of Baal was before him. His promised prize was so close, and yet he could not reach it. The storm was yet to engulf Baal. Without its vitalizing power to sustain Carbander, the void enforced its iron laws of cause and effect upon his body. His unreal being thrilled with electric agonies as the laws of physics sought to deny his existence. Mephiston could not prevent his entry to the world of dust and flesh, but he had damaged Carbander's form in the attempt. The energies that made his corpus had not knitted correctly. He had a limited amount of time to exist in mundane reality. Gripped by hate for the chief librarian, he reached a clawed hand for Baal, howling soundlessly, for it lay frustratingly beyond his grasp, and no exertion of will would bring it nearer. The storm was maddeningly close. Bathed in its energy, he might force a path to Baal. It was not to be. As the wavefront of the cicatrix maledictum rushed to engulf the red scar, Carbander was already falling. The void could not kill him, but nor did it care to bend its rules to suit his whim. Giant wings thrashing helplessly at airless space, Carbander fell with increasing speed down the gravity well of Baal Primus. The space between the three worlds was a glorious battleground. Carbander greatly approved of the slaughter he witnessed. Shattered Tyranid ships filled the vacuum with spilled fluids. Space marine craft burned in their own venting atmospheres. Here were blood and skulls aplenty for Lord Khorne. As Carbander fell closer to Baal Primus's chilly surface, the great rift boiled in system. An invisible psychic shockwave ran before it, disrupting the battle as it slammed into the monumental soul of the hive mind. Carbander laughed to hear the bio-ships screaming as their psychic web was shattered. He eyed them covetously, Such giant skulls the ships possessed, all worthy offerings for the Lord of Blood. They were, as yet, out of reach. As the baleful light of the warp rubbed out the stars, reality became more amenable to Kabanda's being. But still, he could not fly. He was sucked down through a raging maelstrom of combat that turned still as the rift opened. Space marine ships firing on living craft were suddenly silenced. Huge, slug-like hive ships convulsed, pulping their internal structures. Kraken ships, driven mad, tore out their own eyes with thrashing tentacles. Bioplasmic drives winked out. Hunter-killers turned on each other in a frenzy of bloodletting. The agony of the hive mind was an exquisite pleasure to the demon. Battling it would have been finer. Both war and pain were denied him as the monumental intellect driving the hive fleet shattered and went dark. Kabanda fell unnoticed, his huge form a speck amid the giant ships of the warring fleets. He raged at both sides as he plummeted, furious he could attack neither. Tyranid craft wallowed helplessly as he rushed by, ignorant of him while the hive mind underwent its small death. Baal was denied to him. The war in the void was not his to fight. Raging, he turned his attention upon the onrushing moon. Fury turned to amusement as he spied the battle upon the surface. Trailing the fires of atmospheric re-entry, Kabanda rushed towards the ground, a furious comet heralding the opening of the Great Rift and the beginning of the Noctis Eterna. Thunderhawks are en route to your position and will extract you within 20 minutes, Chapter Master. Seth fought with redoubled fury. His men and the Knights of Blood warred side by side. Arranging the evacuation had taken too long. Fighting free of the swarm around Baal and sailing for Baal Secundus had taken the victors several hours. Precious time bled away with the blood of his men. He and Jule held out in the fortress of wrathful vigilance. On the metallic mountain spur opposite, furious sentinel burned. The Tyranids scaled the necklace, numerous as the extinct ants of ancient Earth. They poured into the cavities of the downed orbitals. The ground already vibrated to the drumming of a million alien hooves pounding through the passages. Nothing was left. Only Tyranids and Seth remained. The giant filaments of feeding tubes rose up to the sky all around their position. The swarms attacking them were reinforced by others diverted from battles won. There was such order to their armies. They marched in perfect patterns. Like a vortex described by grains of sand, they circled around the last fortress of Baal Primus. Queues of Xenos, waiting patiently to die, stretched from the horizon to the fort. The big guns were silent. Their armor was all lost. A handful of dreadnoughts fought alongside a few hundred space marines. Makeshift walls of salvaged ancient scrap collapsed under the weight of the alien dead. Gaunts, gene-stealers, and warriors poured through multiple breaches. The hive mind held back its larger creatures in a show of biological parsimony. Seth would have seen contempt in the move were it any other species, but behind it was merely simple, brute economics. The larger strains cost more in resources and time to grow. The smaller beasts would do the job just as well. If the hive mind thought the flesh tearers were finished, Gabriel Seth would show it otherwise. "Fall back to the tower!" he boxed. He dodged a swooping shrike, gunning it down as it flapped its leathery wings and rose up and away. He wielded his eviscerator one-handed, spinning the heavy weapon around with practiced expertise. With every pass, the limbs of Tyranids fell bleeding. He did not linger to finish those he maimed, but pressed onward to the center point of the fortress, from where his remaining warriors would be evacuated. The forts were constructed around ancient bastions of the fallen orbital. His tech marines had found the two virtually intact under layers of accreted soil and debris. Patched up, surrounded by a perimeter wall, they had performed well as strong points until now. Seth barreled through a knot of gaunts, slashing and shooting a dozen to death as he tore up the inclined ramp leading to the fort.
"Follow me! By the blood, follow me! To Baal! To Baal! All here is lost!" he roared.
As he went, his men abandoned their positions to fall in behind him, firing as they ran. He left the last mortals to their fate on the walls. Some fled, some remained and bravely manned the guns, others ran, screaming. Nobody would remember either their bravery or their cowardice. Major breaches peppered the walls behind Seth, more being forced as they ran. The 10 yards between Ward and Bastion was filling with alien war beasts. Guns ran dry, hundreds of creatures were blasted to pieces. There were so many of them, Seth could have dropped a lance strike on the site and watched the crater fill in seconds with alien monsters to replace the dead. Some of his men did not follow in his wake. The thirst was on them all, driving them insane. Only those around Seth and the sacred reliquary kept their minds. Too many of them plunged headlong into the black rage. They remained where they were, abandoning their weapons to batter creatures to death with their fists. A flesh-tearer's black rage was terrible to behold, more savage and devastating than that of their brother chapters. Quicker to rise, harder to fight off. Seth left his warriors to their fate. They would die as they had lived, in service to the Emperor of Mankind. That was enough. Biomunitions screamed through the air, in some cases literally so, their vestigial mouths shrieking out inconceivable pain. Something the size of a man's head exploded on the bastion's wall close by Seth's running band. Thrashing vines speared out from the impact site, ripping 2 flesh-tearers and a knight of blood off their feet and shredding them, armor and all, upon wickedly sharp thorns. The central tower was in sight.
"Open the gate!" Seth voxed.
The bastion's armored airlocks were long gone. In their place were rough but sturdy gates made from scavenged plates of plastile. They swung back on reinforced hinges, primitive as a feudal world's castle portal. A second group of flesh-tearers came running up the walkway from the other side of the gatehouse. Merging with Seth's band, they hurled themselves up the ramp towards the gate. Heavy weapons opened fire from makeshift battlements, sweeping the gate ramp clear of pursuing beasts. Seth and his warriors rushed through. He turned to look back as the others pounded within the bastion. A handful of his men and knights of blood were still coming. Tyranids raced after them, engulfing them as surely as a racing avalanche swallows a building.
"Close the gates," he ordered. "There are still warriors outside, my lord."
"Then they are lost," said Seth. "Close the gates."
Extraction craft inbound. Prepare to depart. Estimated time of arrival, 10 minutes. Seth looked upward, searching without result for the bright shape of the Victus moving across the morning sky. The atmosphere was clearing of aerial organisms, but their swirling flocks still observed the horizon. The bastion's anti-aircraft weapons chugged out shots in short bursts. Seth had ordered them to conserve their ammunition. It appeared they would not need it. A strong wind blew directly towards the capillary towers. The air was thinning. The final stages of consumption were underway. Through his battle fury, Seth struggled to think, but he could see it was only a matter of hours before the air became too thin to support atmospheric flight. From the top of the bastion, he had a fine view of the end of the world. Away from his small island of defiance, consumption vessels jostled for space. The bright jewels of digestion pools winked at the base of huge bone towers. His enhanced eyes allowed him to see bloated eater beasts dragging themselves into them to be dissolved, and their essences sucked up the tubes to the waiting fleet. For several miles around the last fortress, the Tyranid horde seethed. Beyond it, the landscape had become almost tidy, scraped clean of all useful biological and mineral resources by the swarm. It appalled him how quickly it was accomplished. Baal Primus was being eaten alive. A priority box request impinged on his thinking. Seth accepted it.
"Belthiel,"
he said.
"My lord, there is something happening,"
said the librarian. He was having difficulty speaking.
"There are ripples in the warp."
Belthiel's words became a pained grunt.
"Belthiel! Belthiel!" said Seth. "The sky!"
someone shouted. Seth looked heavenward. A burning meteor plummeted through the thinning aerial swarm. Seth mistook it for a weapon of some kind, for it did not follow the curve of the world as debris should, but fell in a straight line as if fired. It slammed into the ground with a dull crump, sending up a mushroom cloud of dust. He would have thought nothing more of it had the sky not changed.
"The sky! The sky!"
More space marines were shouting, pointing upwards. A tremor ran through the Tyranid horde. Its well-ordered patterns shifted, breaking apart for a second, reforming, then breaking down again. Pressure built behind Seth's eyes. A metallic taste filled his mouth. Centaur Jewel came into the battlement, his armor filthy with alien viscera.
"What is happening?"
he said. He grunted his words, forcing them out through a jaw clamped tight with thirst.
"Warpcraft," Seth said. "I can feel it."
It was more than the work of a witch. Where the meteor had pierced the swarm, a red stain appeared, spreading rapidly until the dome of the sky was a deep and ugly red. A bloody night fell as the rim of the horizon went from pale pink to deep red. The Tyranids were in disarray. Those attacking the walls stopped dead, or fell down, their limbs curled inwards. Others ran back and forth aimlessly, or attacked their broodmates. Out on the plains, the ordered pattern of the assault broke into pieces. Then they began to scream. Seth and Jewel looked on in disbelief as consumption ships fell from their tethers, bringing down soaring capillary towers. Explosions bloomed along the flanks of bioships full of volatile gases. Lightning crackled around the hole in the sky. It warped the view of space around it, distorting all things as if viewed through twisted lenses. A deafening roar blasted across the landscape. A giant figure hauled itself out of the pit made by the meteor's landing.
"Demon!" said Seth.
Jewel growled, something in him responding to the Neverborn's arrival.
"How long until your craft arrive?"
Seth checked his chronometer.
6 minutes, if they make it."
The demon smote the earth with its axe. The ground trembled and split. From the wound in the ground, a thrusting column of skulls burst, turning as it grew. Reality writhed around the column. Skulls from all over the battlefield were drawn to it, bursting from the dead, bouncing wet and dripping across the dust plains. At the base of the growing column, they rolled impossibly upward, adding themselves to the girth of the tower. Rotating like a screw, the tower rose higher and higher until the pinnacle touched the hole in the sky. The tip disappeared within the unnatural void, but the pillar did not stop. It continued to twist, heading out of the real world into some other place. A deafening peal of thunder blasted across the plains. Seth and Jewel were battered backwards by an invisible force. Warriors from both chapters screamed as the black rage answered Korn's call. Seth blacked out. For how long, he could not tell. When he rose again, his thoughts were black and barely under his control. Only by dint of his formidable will did he retain his sense of self, while space marines around him cast off sanity and leapt howling from the bastion into the mass of screaming aliens. Flickering visions of the distant past threatened to overwhelm him. The scent of blood tormented him. Something made him grip Amit's reliquary to his chest so hard he feared he might break it and spill its precious contents upon the bloodied ground. Its presence calmed him, allowing him to think. He looked at the cylinder.
"To me! To me!" he roared.
Bloody spit flew from his mouth.
"To the relic! It will save us!"
His men reeled towards him, fighting against their curse. But when they drew closer to their lord, they calmed. Swarms of demons were descending the column, crawling downwards head first towards the dying world of Baal Primus. They ran with supernatural speed from the base of their hellish stair, fanning out in every direction. The lead elements charged into the Tyranids. Locked in position, the aliens were easy prey for the demons, and a great slaughter began. A red tide swept upward towards the fortress. Suddenly, the screaming of the Tyranids stopped. They awoke from their trance. No semblance of order returned to the swarm. Whether they fought against the demons, fled, or did nothing, seemed to be the product of chance. They roared and screamed all the louder. Now they did so as beasts, not the vessels of the hive mind.
"How can this be?"
said Seth. His head throbbed with fury. Waves of bloodlust battered his psyche. He wanted to kill. Through it all, somehow, the Thunderhawks came. Engines roared loudly. 6 of them arrived. There was space for only one atop the fortress. It landed heavily, the other 5 peeling off and strafing the Tyranids and demons surrounding the fortress. The assault ramp slammed down.
"My lord, we must depart,"
boxed the pilot, the strain of the demon's call in his voice.
"We go now," said Seth to his men, "or we shall be damned."
He clutched at his head, fingers scratching his shaven scalp. His skull pounded to irresistible war drums. Jewel growled and twitched, still kneeling after the psychic blow of the demon's arrival. Slowly, he shook his head and rose up before Seth. Seth's hands closed protectively around the cask, prepared to kill Jewel to save it. But perhaps because of Sanguinius's feather, Jewel had control of himself still. With deliberate, stiff movements, he reached up and unclasped his helm.
"We cannot go back," said the Lord of the Knights of Blood.
"I see," said Seth. And he did. Jewel's face was contorted beyond any generous definition of humanity. His muscles strained and the skin turned a terrible shade of red. His eyes were yellow. Sharp, elongated teeth crowded his mouth, forcing his lips back so they were painfully stretched.
"The rage has us. It punishes us. My chapter is finished." "When did this happen?"
"Years ago. It began like it is with you. A rise in the thirst, a growing number of our brothers falling into the black rage. In our desperation, we let ourselves give in to the thirst. For a while it helped. By the blood of the innocent, we controlled ourselves. It did not last. Soon these changes set in. We thought blood would save us. It damned us. Look upon me, Seth. There are creatures like me imprisoned in the Tower of Amareo on Baal. If our true nature were known, we would be exterminated. Only blood keeps the black rage in check now. Only blood. This is why we fight alone. I would fight with you because you, of all our brother chapters, would understand."
Jewel looked out over the battle. Most of his warriors had broken from the fort and fought outside its walls.
"The wrath of a beast provokes the thirst. The demons of Khorne covet our kind. They see our rage as the same as theirs. They are wrong. Ours remains a holy fury. No doubt this new beast wishes to subvert our might to its own end and deliver us as slaves to its bloody god. It shall not be so."
He threw his helmet down and drew his sword.
"Go now, Gabriel Seth. Take what remains of your warriors. Remember us. Strive so that what happened to our chapter does not happen to yours. We sacrifice ourselves in penitence. It is our due. We shall show the Neverborn that though we may rage as they do, we shall never fall into their ways. For we are noble. We are pure. We are the sons of..."
The demon screamed again. A fresh wave of anger and the desire to slay threatened to undo Seth's resolve.
Jewel roared.
"Leave,"
said Jewel, his voice losing its humanity, becoming harsh and animalistic. "Take the relic back to Baal. Aid, aid, Dante. We will cover your retreat." "My lord,"
boxed the pilot. Seth shook his head, clear of red fog. The day was so bizarre, it had taken on the semblance of a dream. If he did not control himself, he would end up in a nightmare of blood.
"We leave," he boxed. He held up the reliquary. "Look upon the purity of the great angel and be saved."
Those of his warriors still in possession of their minds obeyed, running aboard the first Thunderhawk. When it was full, it lifted off and the second descended. Belfiel followed, dragged by his brothers, raging and ranting, and Harahel. Seth saw them all aboard the ships. Jewel strode away without another word. The few of his warriors remaining in the bastion followed. One remained, a nameless warrior, his eye lenses locked with Seth's. Then he too was gone. A third Thunderhawk lumbered down from the sky. More of Seth's warriors were losing themselves, their psyches ravaged by the hellish anger of Khorne's demons. They turned from salvation and ran back into the fray. The vanguard of Carbander's force had reached the false corrie the forts looked over. With smoking black swords, they laid the aliens low. Bio-acids washed over them without effect. Bullet grubs passed through their unearthly flesh as they flickered in and out of existence. Seth swallowed hard. He had seen this before. The demon's manifestation was weak, despite the storm curdling the heavens. Their invasion would not last long. The fourth gunship descended. Dreadnoughts and warriors ran on board. The wounded were carried, limp and unresponsive, into the craft. Other battle brothers raged and shouted as they got onto the ship, on the verge of losing all self-control. Seth locked Bloodreaver to his back, setting aside violence. His hands free of the tools of war, he cradled the holy relic and bowed his head in silent prayer. Minutes passed. A hand grasped him. Seth looked up into the face of Apollos. In one hand was his gore-caked Crozius, in the other Seth's helm. The chaplain breathed hard, and for a moment Seth thought Apollos would slay him. But he held out Seth's helmet
and waited while the chapter master replaced it on his head. Outside the wall, the sounds of fighting had intensified, a three-way racket of screams issuing from human, demon, and tyrannid throats. The chaplain nodded once. Together, they clambered aboard the final ship, and it lifted off, climbing fast and hard for the sky. Centaur Jewel led his last warriors into a savage's vision of hell. The tyrannids continued to devour the world while they were being slaughtered. Huge fleshy structures pumped away the resources of a world even as they burned. Caught in the throes of their consumption cycle, the tyrannid ships were unprepared for the advent of the warp storm. They fell flaming from the sky. Feeder tubes toppled and draped themselves across the landscape with deafening wet slaps. Intestinal towers burst as they collapsed, sending out floods of biological slop in corrosive tsunamis across the dead land. The ground was breaking apart under the influence of the demonic incursion. Fissures gaped wide, aglow with magma. Seething blood welled up through the ground and boiled alien bioconstructs alive. Mountains of skulls grew from holes in the stone. Around the stairway of bone, reality warped the most, the land turning to screaming flesh. The plains were already overrun with demons, but still the legions of Khorne marched down and around the spiral stair in infinite procession into the battle for Baal Primus. Thousands of lesser demon kin fought tyrannid beasts. Uncanny blades met hyper-evolved symbiotic weapons. The screams and shrieks of monsters rent the air. The tyrannids were acting erratically. Divorced from their controlling intelligence, they reverted to instinctive behavior patterns, and these were open to the corruption of the blood god. They were easy prey, many of them having lost whatever passed for a mind. They acted without thought. Many writhed upon the ground. Into this raging battle, the last of the Knights of Blood plunged. They tore off their helmets, revealing faces as monstrous as those of the demons they fought. They sang out their death songs into the thinning air. They made no distinction between Xenos and Neverborn, slaying all that came within reach of their weapons. Centaur Jewel was swamped with the rage of Khorne. Gone was the niggling psychic pressure of the alien mind, replaced by a ferocious urging to kill. He looked to his own men and wanted to hack them down, but he resisted. He drew on the purer wrath within him, forcing aside the demonic influence scratching at his soul. "I will not succumb! I feel the wrath of Sanguinius! I feel the holy force of his anger!" he roared. He smashed down a small tyrannid beast, crushing it as surely as an insect with the spiked guard of his chainsword. A bloodletter rose to meet him, long black tongue whipping through the air as it swung a massive brass sword at the chaptermaster's head. Jewel's sword met its blade mid-sweep. He held it there while he raised his gun and blasted a dozen holes into the demon spawn until its unnatural flesh succumbed and it died with an angry scream. Hot gales raced through the depleted air. Centaur Jewel howled, expelling the invasive anger of the warp from his spirit by the force of his voice. The Knights of Blood fought for fighting's sake. The battle could not be won. His warriors were never the most cohesive force. Upon that battlefield they finally abandoned any semblance of squad tactics. They killed and died alone. Only Jewel had a goal he intended to meet. He battled his way through the shrieking hordes of tyrannids and their demonic tormentors, onward to where the great red demon Kabanda slaughtered the largest alien weapons beasts, carving away their heads with absurd care. His trophies toppled not downward from gouting necks, but fell away upward into the vortex turning about the pillar of skulls.
"Kabanda!" Jewel shouted. "Kabanda! Fight me!"
The angel's bane did not hear him, so Jewel forced further passage through the three-sided melee, weaving past a blood-crazed dreadnought fighting a monstrosity composed entirely of screaming mouths. He felled a bloodletter, grappling with one of his warriors, shot down a hound with a frill of skin around its neck that leapt at him. The tyrannids he ignored unless they directly confronted him. Though the demons were legion, their hold on reality was tenuous. Everyone killed saw three thrown into the warp, and many were but pale outlines, monsters sketched in hate on the canvas of reality.
"Kabanda, face me in the name of the great angel! Fight me!"
At that, the greater demon did turn its apish face upon Jewel. Yellow teeth in red skin grinned horribly at him. Yellow teeth like Jewel's own, red skin like his own, and eyes that stared with the same intensity. A single crack of leathery wings sent Commander high over the fray. He landed, bowed before Jewel in a billow of dust, his fist planted firmly in the ground. Growling, Commander rose up and spread his wings and weapons wide. He looked down upon the chapter master with ferocious mockery.
"Here I am, Centaur Jewel. I will fight you, though you are no Primarch."
The demon took up a combat pose, axe ready to strike, whip snaking back and forth hypnotically. Air shimmered with heat around Commander. Steam rose from the beast's unnatural muscles, carrying the stench of rotting blood and old murder. Most dangerous were the waves of pure aggression beating off the thing. There was no seduction in the demon's lure, no promise of pleasure or knowledge or the cessation of suffering as the other dark gods offered, but a raw open invitation to violence and bloody abandon. It hammered against Centaur Jewel's mind, threatening to crack it open and send him screaming into madness. In the black promise of Commander, Jewel saw his worst excesses.
"See how much you are alike to me," Commander said, taking in Jewel's hideous visage, the muscles straining in his neck and the blood pounding fit to burst his veins. "Truly, you are Khorne's creatures. Join me and war by my side in an eternity of glorious slaughter. For you who thirst for blood, I offer oceans to slake your need."
Jewel fell to his knees with a groan. His heart ran so fast, something gave inside him. He spat a mouthful of his own blood onto the ground, where it hissed and bubbled.
"Pathetic," said Carbander. "You are nothing compared to your gene, sire."
"By his fury," said Jewel.
He forced himself onto one knee.
"See how he struggles," mocked Commander.
"By his fury shall I stand," said Jewel quickly,
fearing the knowledge of words would slip away from his mind and leave him dumb.
"Ah, fury," said Commander.
He cracked his whip.
"Fury is the power Khorne gives. Only by his gift do you stand capable of facing me, when any other of your unworthy breed would have ripped his own skin off at the sight. Now turn around and take your rightful place at my side. All your line will be mine eventually. Seek my favor. Become the first."
Centaur Jewel looked up into the demon's face and shook his head.
"Very well. You cannot beat me."
Jewel laughed, the blood pooling in his throat, making it a gurgle.
"We delay you, monster. Your power is not so great. Already your host unravels. Your time here is limited."
"You will still die,"
shouted Commander with sudden rage.
"I do not care," Jewel raised his sword. "Sanguinius banished you. I cannot. I come to give you my testament, demon,"
he said, his voice strangled.
"They call us monsters, rightfully so. But let it be known to you and your master that it is Sanguinius's fury that gives me strength, not bastard Khorne's."
Centaur Jewel roared his last and charged at the angel's bane. Seth's vision was a nauseating spiral of red and black. He clenched Amit's reliquary to his chest. If he let go, he would attack his men. Through slitted eyes, he watched them go through the same internal struggle. Waves of red-hot hatred washed up from the planet below. The Thunderhawk bucked, engine screaming with effort. More than gravity assailed it. Its machine spirit, too, was gripped with wrathful impulses.
"By his blood am I made! By his blood am I made! By his blood am I made!"
muttered Seth over and over again. Apollos took up the chant. The others joined him, spitting the words through clenched teeth, moaning them between pleas for blood. There were so few flesh-tearers left. 5 Thunderhawks. So few. The Thunderhawk burst from the gravity well of Baal Primus. For a second, all was well. Their weight slipped from them. The pushback of acceleration diminished. If this were a normal extraction, they would be aboard the Victus in a matter of minutes. The illusion of normality was ripped away as the Thunderhawk encountered the storm. Most storms in the war perfected only the immaterium, but this was such a powerful tempest it intruded into reality, rucking up the flat plane of space into titanic waves. The ship bounced along the surface of a tortured universe. Within, the flesh-tearers felt their souls half ripped from their bodies. Flashes of the past intruded into Seth's mind. He saw his Primarch. He saw the great enemy. Worse things came at him. Landscapes of bone, rivers of blood, hell-spawned warriors fighting desperately eternally for the amusement of a violent god. Metal squealed. The ship was bent and stretched like dough. Terrible pain speared Seth through and through, every cell in his body individually and sadistically impaled. His helm plate display fizzed. The chronograph ran forward at incredible speed. Diabolical faces leered at him through electronic static. Wicked voices hissed in his ears. The Space Marines were screaming, caught on the double-edged blade of pain and bloodlust. At the edge of his consciousness, Seth apprehended the wail of failing engines, alarms, and the battle shouts of the insane. And yet, through it all, the reliquary sat in his arms, a rock of calm in a sea of rage, and Seth drew strength from it, and from him the calm passed to his men. It seemed to last forever, as all acute suffering does. When suffering is done, it is as if it never was. The human mind cannot remember pain, only the fear of it. A space marine knows no fear. The sickening motion of the craft ceased. It spun out of control, tumbling end over end. The lumens in the transit bay were out. Blackness surrounded him. Seth's breath thundered in his ears. Emergency lumens pinked on. Seth's helm plate crackled and burst back into colorful life. The main lights reactivated a moment later, followed by the cough of misfiring engines. A second of grinding, and they sang true. The Thunderhawk leveled out. Seth looked upon an awful scene. Several of his men had succumbed to the rage and slain each other. Three of them still ranted at the brothers restraining them. Globules of blood floated about in the microgravity of the transit cabin. At the sight of them, his hands gripped at the reliquary involuntarily.
"My lord, I have...
The pilot spoke via vox. He sounded confused.
"Tell me the status of the enemy," said Seth. "Give me a pict feed so that I might see. My armor will not form a data bridge." "That is it, my lord. They are gone. The enemy are gone."
"What?"
"I do not believe it," continued the pilot. "I cannot believe it."
Rarely had a wrath-filled flesh terror sounded so confused.
"The storm? Also gone."
The co-pilot cut in.
"There is more, my lord."
"What?"
said Seth, a sense of cold wonder creeping into his hearts.
"You will not believe me."
Seth turned down the maglock of his boots so he might walk.
"Then I am coming to see myself."
He made his way up the access stairs to the cockpit, still carrying the reliquary. Through the canopy, he saw that the storm had vanished from the sky, taking with it the Tyranid swarm. Baal writhed with unnatural energies yet, but the stars shone again on the velvet black of space. Making his way to Baal with engine stacks burning was the biggest Imperial fleet Gabriel Seth had ever seen.
"My lord," said the Tech Marine pilot, "we are being hailed."
Chapter 27. Fall of Angels. In the Exis Chapel, Commander Dante paid his respects to Sanguinius one final time. In the 6 days since the Cicatrix Maledictum opened, the angelic host had slaughtered the Tyranids. For a time, the hive mind appeared to be absent, and the disorganized aliens were easy prey for the Space Marines' wrath. A series of carefully staged sorties drove the aliens back from the gates of the redoubt, buying the signs of Sanguinius valuable time to regroup within. The Blood Angels held the redoubt still. The rest of the arcs was in the hands of the enemy. Now their respite was over. The hive mind stirred once again. Ordermail rested his hand gently on Dante's battered armor. There was not a plate of it untouched. Its luster was gone, gold worn down to bare ceramite in the few places it was visible beneath scabs of sealant foam and dried alien blood.
"Ordermail," said Dante, "they are ready."
"They await your command, my lord," said Ordermail. "The preparations are made. The Amarian guards stand ready to open the gates to the tower. I am bound to remind you that once this order is given, it cannot be undone. The blood curse will not stop until they're dead.
They cannot be contained once released.
I will have it done, said Dante.
Then it is time, my lord, said Ordemail.
Dante rose slowly, keeping his head bowed to the modest statue of Sanguinius in the chapel's reliquary niche. The statue was white alabaster, imported to Baal centuries ago. Light, the color of arterial blood, flooding through the windows of the chapel, stained the statue a deep, ominous red. The Baalian sky's subtle shades of pink had been replaced by a bloody effulgence that never changed. The sun was gone. The moons were gone. There was blood in the sky and rage in Dante's heart.
Now is indeed the time, said Dante.
He saluted the statue of his genefather and bowed as deeply as his armor would allow. The Exis Chapel was his by right as chaptermaster, his private place for prayer and contemplation. He did not expect to set foot within it again. The stairs from the Exis Chapel to the Basilica Sanguinarum resonated to the sounds of Space Marines singing the Mori Patris, the death hymn of the blood, as the last defenders of Baal knelt with heads bowed over their weapons, offering up their lives a final time in the service of their Primarch and their Emperor. Dante emerged from the stairs' screened door and walked down the central aisle of the basilica. All the warriors were in black now. There was no paint, so the Space Marines had stained their armor as best they could, rubbing blood and soot into the plates to blacken them. The individual colors of chapters were shrouded in mourning for a bloodline soon to be extinct. The cathedral was half ruined. Ornate windows were blown into piles of glass and stone. The roof had partially collapsed. Acid marks pitted the floor where Xenos beasts had gained brief ingress before being cut down. The smell of burning was strong everywhere. Dante took his place in the pulpit at the head of the basilica for the final time. Chaplains and sanguinary priests of all the chapters lined up at the front and turned to face the assembled host, a handful only, fewer than the blood angels alone had possessed before the coming of the Leviathan. Corbulo lived, as did Ordemail. Many of their comrades had died. They together represented a quarter of the Council of Blood and Bone. Dante joined his voice to the singing of the death hymn. The numbers were deceptively high, 2,000, twice as many as a full chapter, but a fraction of the angelic host. This defeat was a deadly blow to the signs of Sanguinius, one that they would never recover from, thought Dante. Tears coursed down his cheeks. His reign would see the legacy of a Primarch destroyed. Dante banished his woe as the Mori Patris reached its sorrowful end. The roosts of the cyber constructs who tended the cathedral were empty. No auto-choristers remained to leaven the Space Marines' basso profundo voices with higher registers. Hearing the song that way from so many transhuman throats and without embellishment lifted Dante's soul a little. There was a purity there. If the mixed songs of Cyborg, Adeptus Astartes, and Thrall had represented Sanguinius's blood mixed with that of mortal men, now it was distilled back to its true potency. When the last reverberations died away from the cathedral stone and Dante spoke, his voice was strong and clear, free of doubt and despair. All who heard it felt their blood stir. There is always beauty, even in the depths of ugliness, even in the depths of defeat, said Dante. Your song raises us all above this realm of earthly flesh, for we are angels and warriors in equal part. Our devotion to our Emperor and our Genefather is a paragon to which the citizens of the Imperium have long aspired. Now we stand upon the brink of death. This will not change. I say let us not go into the long silences of history, but stride forward into legend. If the Tyranids remained without guidance, we might survive here, behind the walls of the Heavenward Redoubt. But they reorganize. The hive mind is disrupted no longer. Our librarians report the shadow falls once more. It is weak, but it grows stronger with every passing minute, coalescing around one potent nexus. If this is allowed to continue, the Tyranids will become of one mind again, and they shall attack without mercy, and we will perish here within these walls. We have no notice of the fleet. The void is awash with the energies of the warp. If we strike down their leader, we may deal the swarm one fatal death blow and save the worlds beyond Baal. His voice caught. He recovered quickly. In this way, we will win a victory of sorts.
we will most likely die in the attempt. Millions of them remain, scant thousands of us. If we stay behind these walls, they will overwhelm the last of our defenses in a few days. This is the only way. The shadow in the warp is a many-headed monster, more ferocious than the Hydra of ancient tales, for it has a billion times a billion heads, and all must be severed before it will die. We have the blades, we have the will. Let us carve the skulls of this creature. Are we not the sons of a great angel? Are we not the most blessed of all Adeptus Astartes? He let the question hang on the air unanswered. Our Primarch was among the first to die, but he lives eternal in all our beings. The meat and blood of our bodies are his host. For 10,000 years we have protected his legacy within the fortresses of our bodies. He bowed his head. That time is at an end. We are all death company now. The sarcophagi lie shattered, their occupants devoured, and our future upon Baal has died with them. The chapter is finished here, but it is not yet dead. Our bloodline may survive in the gene seed of our brothers elsewhere in the galaxy. It may not. This question of survival is no longer ours to contemplate. Divert your gaze from the future and think of the present, of now, of what we might accomplish in these next glorious hours. For if we must go into the darkness of extinction, let us do so with our swords in our hands and the wrath of Sanguinius in our grasp. When tidings of this battle reach other worlds, let them lift up their guns and say, "We shall not fall, we shall not die meekly. Through battle we remember and honor the sons of Baal." His voice raised. "Who will say I? Who will raise his sword with mine? Who will bring burnished steel and wrathful soul to the slaughter and let red ruin flow? Who will die in remembering our Lord? Our flesh may be devoured, but they cannot touch our souls. We are the most blessed of the Emperor's warriors. The soul of our Lord lives in the minds and the hearts of every one of us. We, the red-clad, the blood-hungry, we, the wrathful and the pure, we, the sons of Sanguinius, most noble and glorious of all the Primarchs, we hold more than his memory in our hearts and minds. The great angel would not lurk here waiting for his end. He would strike out, seeking to destroy the leader of his enemies, as he did when he confronted his brother Horus." His voice lowered. "Such a choice is now ours, as it was our father's. If we do this, we shall all surely perish. But Baal may yet escape and play host to space marines still. You and I will not be among them, but the name of the Blood Angels and the score of other chapters who fought with us here will yet be known across the galaxy." Dante paused and reached up behind his head. Seals hissed as he uncoupled the death mask of Sanguinius, exposing his aged face proudly to his brethren. "For a millennium I have worn this mask, so long that mortal humans on 1,000 worlds equate Dante with Sanguinius. One has become the other. I have no need of a mask any longer. I need not wear our Lord's face. He is in here, in my hearts." He banged his fist against his chest. "I reveal my face to you, long hidden for shame of the weakness age reveals. I shall wear this mask when I fight in honor of our Lord, but I go into the final battle not as a poor facsimile of our father, but as Commander Louis Dante, son of Baal, son of the great angel, whose living body is the host of the Primarch." He paused. 2,000 black helmets looked back expectantly. "What say you, warriors of Baal?" he said in a ferocious whisper that rose in volume and power, "that we let slip the red thirst one final time and fly upon wings of wrath with our Lord into battle. I commend you all, O ye mighty, to the protection of the great angel. For the Emperor, for Sanguinius, there is no more beauty to be had from life. So let us then seek a beautiful death." "A beautiful death for the Emperor, for Sanguinius!" the doomed angels shouted. Their voices shook the ruins of the Basilica Sanguinarum. Dante nodded, satisfied. "Then we march, all of us who bear the blood, Chaplain Ordemail. Summon the Amorean guard. Open the gates of the Tower of Amoreo. Let the damned march with the damned." The Tower of Amoreo had withstood the invasion with its windowless walls intact. Even while the aliens battered at its walls,
The battle servitors, dreadnoughts, space marines, and blood thralls of the Amaraean Guard had not once left their posts, keeping watch on the raging creatures within. The gates of red iron opened rarely, and never to let anything out. They shuddered. The Amaraean Guard's 50-strong cohort withdrew from the gatehouse to the covered battlements overlooking the way to the tower. With a booming creak, the gates opened wide. As they did so, the bell at the pinnacle of the tower was unswaddled. Red and black silk was cast from shutters that had never been opened before and fell, spiraling to the ground. The bell began to toll. The custodian of the damned emerged first, a space marine champion oath-bound to remain within the tower until the end of days. Now those times had come, and he marched out with his sword flaring with energy, black armor glinting like oil. From behind him came the rattling of chains and the grinding of rusted doors forced wide by laboring machines and howling and screaming of inhuman nature. All the words the thick animal voices uttered were broken beyond comprehension, save one.
Blood! Blood! Blood!
The damned occupants of the Tower of Amareo burst from the darkness. They were abominations, twisted far from their human origins by rampantly malfunctioning gene seed. They were twice the size of mortal men, bulging with muscles. Yellowed fangs took the place of human teeth, their skin and blood red and waxy, their eyes amber. They bounded along on knuckled fists like apes, screaming at the sky. 5 dozen immortal monsters whose suffering hung over the chapter like a poison, free at last to kill. They would take no direction. The custodian of the damned stood aside and went within an armored cylinder to let them pass. They sped by, raging, beating at their flesh, long black nails ripping at their own skin. A way had been cleared from the tower's gate on the Arx Murus down to the bottom of the redoubt into the Well of Angels. Directed by barred doors and high barricades, the damned hurtled onward. Their roars filled the corridors of the keep until they came to the grand inner ward, an internal killing field behind the Bloodgate. As the damned approached, portcullis, gates, and energy field were all opened. Dead tyrannids tumbled down from the corpse piles mounted up against the gates to join the strata of stinking alien flesh filling the Well of Angels. The damned scrambled out over the bodies, scenting things to kill. Once they were gone, inner gates at the back of the ward opened, and the space marines ran out. By the time they were assembled and ready for their final sally a few minutes later, the screeches of embattled tyrannids were already echoing in the hall. Dante raised the Axe Mortalis.
"Sons of Baal, forward!" he shouted.
"For Sanguinius, for the Emperor, a beautiful death," they replied.
And together they ran through the heavenward redoubt's Bloodgate and into the occupied Well of Angels. Chapter 28. Advent of the Tyrant. The Blood Angels stormed through the Well of Angels, smashing aside the tyrannids remaining inside as they made for the Elohim Gate. In the tunnel through the mountain wall, they found no opposition. The inmates of Amareo's tower had preceded them and slaughtered everything in their path. The end of the tunnel beckoned, bright and red as a bullet wound. As they ran, Dante shouted,
"From his blood are we born, from his essence are we made. From his passion comes our art, from his nobility comes beauty, from his might stems justice, from his thirst is born righteous rage."
For the first time in 12 centuries, Dante let his control slip away, allowing the all-encompassing fury of Sanguinius to push aside his humanity. His worst fear was realized. To let go was pleasurable. Dante embraced the red first. Blood roared in his head, bringing pain, but with it came relief. No longer must he hold himself in check. He exulted in his freedom as his muscles swelled and distended. His heart hammered in his chest like an automatic weapon fired to the point of malfunction. His angel's teeth extruded themselves from his gums.
"Rage!" he shouted. "Rage, rage, rage against the dying of the light."
They burst from the tunnel of the Elohim Gate like the wrath of the Emperor given form. The tyrannids were sluggish in their response. Their whip-crack reactions had yet to return, though a tripling in the hordes outside the walls suggested a growing coordination. The Blood Angels and their successors slammed into the broods of Tyranids filling the landing fields, bowling over the smaller types and crushing them underfoot. They followed a wide road of shattered bodies left by the damned, a weakness in the horde the Space Marines were swift to exploit. Jump packs ignited, sending the few warriors who possessed them arcing over their fellows. Dante went at their head, jets thundering. The last of the Sanguinary Guard flew by his side, led by Don Toriel and Sepharan. No matter which chapter they hailed from, a glorious winged regiment, whose like had not been seen since Sanguinius himself flew the skies of Baal. Ordermail flew with Dante, chanting complex poems to Sanguinius that caught and tripped on his thickening tongue until they became meaningless snarls. They descended with a fury born of sorrow. Dante's feet hammered into the skull of a Tyranid warrior, smashing it flat. Its lash whip curled up and snared his feet. Dante severed it with a blow of his axe and thumped down onto the bloodied sand, then was off at a sprint. He moved like the desert wind, never still, never faltering, despite residual pain from his many wounds. He ran through the wreckage of Space Marine aircraft and tanks, slaughtering every Tyranid he found. A single item pulsed on his helm display, the hive mind nexus detected by his last few psykers. All other data he had removed. In his furious state, he would not have understood them anyway. Cannons, manned by the last mortals in the arcs, boomed from the Citadel Reclusium. The more esoteric weapons were beyond the mortals' comprehension, but they worked the fortress projectile casters well enough. Cones of sand and body parts sprayed wildly upwards, their mad dash for the sky, arrested by gravity only when they'd reached hundreds of feet in altitude. On Dante's helm plate, the marker beat slowly, temptingly, luring the commander into the press of alien monsters. He pressed on through the curtain of explosions. There were few blood thralls left. The ragged conscripts of Baal's moons lacked training, yet by a miracle, Dante was not blown to atoms by his own side. Dante fought his way forward. Ordermail raged at his side, his crozius banging with every impact. The songs of the Angels of Death became debased howling. Any semblance of squad cohesion or tactics went from the battle line as they surrendered themselves to the thirst. They fought and died alone, a wave of howling berserkers who hacked and bludgeoned, who soon forgot the ranged weapons they bore, who broke the chainswords they carried, who grappled with alien monstrosities with weaponless hands. The world was a shifting mass of Xenos, peeling detonations and terrible colors of the sky that hid the universe from sight. The Tyranids were responding, recovering from their shock, if such creatures could be shocked. As Dante drew nearer to the hive node marker, the Tyranids' movements fell into further synchronization. They had yet to attain the perfect simultaneity of the hive mind at peak efficiency, but their attacks evidenced great thought and coordination. They feinted and withdrew. Differing creatures presented themselves to battle particular foes, where before they had come thoughtlessly at the Space Marines. Phosphobio munitions flew overhead on slow parabolas. They slapped into the landing fields, sending out gobbets of burning liquid in every direction, immolating Tyranid and Space Marine equally. Artillery beasts fired and fired, their cannon symbiotes screaming, a heart-rending noise that grew louder as the Space Marines penetrated deeper into the horde. Dante slew with abandon. The honor guard fought alongside him with the consummate skill of murderers 500 years in the making. For all their unstoppable fury, the signs of defeat were unmissable. One by one, the Sanguinary Guard were dragged down, plucked from the air by shrikes, or clawed apart by carnifexes. Sepharan was torn in half by a hive trigon. Don Toriel, hero of Cryptus, was the last to die, falling in a tumble of tattered wings not far from the commander, his golden armor hidden by a thrashing mass of alien limbs as he was ripped to pieces. Dozens of wrecks from the withdrawal were strewn among the landing field's battered temporary buildings. Suits of power armor lay in quantity, their colors stripped by acid. The Tyranids had yet to remove the corpses, for the feeding of the swarm had not begun there. Dante laughed in wild despair. Gathered together, all the sons of Sanguinius could accomplish was to slow the consumption of a single world. Thoughts of that clarity became rare. Dante let the raging monster in his soul out to smash down the foe. His perceptions lost their edge. Hallucination stole upon him, supplanting reality. The first sign of his failing mind was a golden flash overhead, that had him shout in joy. "The Sanguinor!" he called. "He comes at last!" Sanguinus's herald had come to the aid of the Blood Angels whenever they were most sorely pressed for 10 millennia, appearing from nowhere and disappearing as suddenly. He had haunted Dante in particular, his only recorded words spoken to him. Dante had felt abandoned by the holy warrior. He could not know the Sanguinor's absence from Baal was occasioned by his presence at the Cadian Gate. When he looked again, the herald of Sanguinius was nowhere to be seen. The tortured skies were empty. These lying sights came more often, and soon the battle flickered and changed around him. He took a step forward and was sent backwards in time, finding himself fighting alongside blood angels with unfamiliar markings in ancient suits of armor. The sky in that ancient battle was black, lit sporadically by the sheeting glare of energy weapons. He wept for the Emperor's dream as he fought alongside his brothers, but his fury did not abate with his sorrow. It was watered by it, becoming larger than he, a demigod's anger that did not originate in him, but possessed him and overfilled him. The battlefield flickered back to the present. A space marine, burning head to foot in corrosive chemical fire, howled madly, bludgeoning a Tyranid beast with his broken sword as he died. All around, the angels of death were falling. Ordermail charged into a hulking, multi-weaponed assault beast, stunning it with a blow from his Crozier's arcanum, only to be ripped in two by giant crustacean's claws. Dante salivated at the sprays of blood that flowed out. He would have torn his helm free and lapped at the sticky sand then, had a trumpet's sweet notes not halted him. Light shone over a part of the battlefield. The Sanguinor hovered, 500 feet away, sword held upright, finger pointing downward. Warriors in black battle-plate appeared from the shimmering air, their armor covered in skulls and bones. Fire streamed from their eyes and mouths, and when their bolters fired, they shot strange ammunition of blue flame. The Legion of the Damned had come to aid the sons of Sanguinius in their hour of need. Dante blinked, but this vision did not disappear. His warriors shouted and howled, regaining some of their humanity and pressing on after the revenants deeper into the hordes of Tyranids. The Tyranids fell back before their unearthly assailants. The trumpet sounded again, and the Sanguinor pointed again with his blade at a spot on the field. When Dante looked where the herald indicated, the reticle in his helm beat madly and flashed green. He blinked. In his fury, he had forgotten his mission. His vision blurred, and the Sanguinor became an angel of flesh and blood, huge and mighty, clad in blood-red robes.
"Sanguinius,"
Dante said. He pushed on, shoving his way through combatants, whether alien, revenant, or space marine. A carnifex reared up before him, barring his way. Dante prepared to tackle it, hefted the sparking axe mortalis, but a harmless warrior barged past him, face locked in a savage rictus, teeth exposed, and engaged the creature in a hopeless one-sided battle. "Captain Fenn," a quiet part of Dante remarked. The angel Vermilion had been good to his word. Dante ran past, his last embers of intellect telling him he needed to reach the Sanguinor before he lost himself for good. He fought on, sometimes alone, but as he pushed on, he was surrounded by the ghostly shapes of the Legion of the Damned, whose ceaseless uncanny fire felled aliens all around the Chapter Master, and so he drew nearer to the Sanguinor. He passed the first of the beasts of Amareo. The red-skinned giant lay curled up, childlike, surrounded by the rent bodies of Tyranids, its face at peace, as if sleeping after long efforts. The second came soon after, then the third. All were dead, their immortal bodies pierced in 100 places each. The Sanguinor maintained its position, pointing downwards. Warriors from all over the field were converging on the point, not for tactics or for glory or even for survival. They did it for fury, they did it for blood, they did it for their Primarch. Sanguinius reached out to his sons through his herald, and commanded they strike one final blow in his name. They obeyed. A wall of poisonous vapors obscured the target. Spindly things floated by, feeble limbs dangled beneath oversized spore chimneys that pumped out yellow and green granular gases. A trillion spores gave the fog its texture, each one a Tyranid organism smaller than a terrestrial mite. As Dante ran into this smoke, his armor let out a shrill warning. The tiny sporlings attacked his battle-plate, eating into the banded metal of the joints and the soft seals beneath. Where his skin was exposed by broken plate, It blistered under the effects of toxin and acid. He did not feel it. The fog muted all sound. He could see no further than a few yards. Dark shapes grappled in its depths, edges of chitin or ceramite illuminated by weapons fire. The flaming silent warriors of the Damned Legion fought on unaffected. But they drew away from him, lighthouses in the fog, leaving Dante to his fate. He knew in his soul he must fight this battle alone. A blind tyrant guard emerged from the coiling full smoke. It was huge and hunched, bent over its short, heavy claws. Dante engaged his jump pack instinctively, roaring out of the way of its attack and up over its eyeless head. The Ax Mortalis sparkled with the death of 100,000 Tyranid spores as it cleaved down, caving the thing's head in. A shot from a perdition pistol burned out its internal organs and sent it crashing down. A golden glow led Dante on. The snarls and howls of his warriors were barely more human than the hissing chitters and roars of the Tyranids. His flesh burned, his superhuman physiology unable to keep pace with the damage inflicted by the minuscule creatures eating into his body. The sensation barely registered. Pain that would have incapacitated a normal man, even a space marine, was a dim, meaningless throb to him. More of the blind giants emerged from the fog, moving with increasing surety of purpose as the sluggish hive mind reacted to the threat. Space marines came in from every direction, screaming for blood and death, crashing into the guardians of the swarm's leader. Dante shot another of the tyrant guard, wounding it, and slipped by. As it staggered about to follow him, three sons of Sanguinius in blackened armor charged at it. One was scissored in half by the beast. A fire-wreathed warrior with pallid skin moved in to engage the creature with his power fist. Dante did not witness the end of the fight. He headed further into the killing smoke, seeking out the leader beast. The reticle in his borrowed helmet strobed rapidly. He was close. Sounds of battle receded. He ascended a mound of intermingled Tyranid and Imperial dead. The hive mind would consume them altogether. Autophagy was a part of its evolutionary strategy. Its weapons were disposable, like the bolts in a space marine's gun. The biomass of its warrior beasts would find new uses elsewhere. The smoke thinned as Dante climbed. He could not recall seeing such a tall pile of dead from the arcs. When he looked at his feet, the Tyranids had gone. Instead, he walked over the tangled corpses of myriad species, all soaked in bright gore. Not a few among them were men or space marines, and he numbly recognized some as faces from long ago. Dante walked on the collected remains of his victims. Whether this was a psychic attack by the hive mind or a symptom of his immediate mental collapse was immaterial. There was one more body that must be added to this pile. Then he might rest. He forced himself up the phantom mound by strength of will alone. Up he went, for hours. At times he was accompanied by ghosts from his past. A boy with a black smile. A blood angel he had executed. A teacher he had almost forgotten. A space marine's memory was eidetic. But Dante was so old that his memories had corrupted over time. That which he had not entirely forgotten of those distant days, he struggled to access. Now all his past was there to torment him. The corpse pile grew steeper. Dante was forced to lock his axe to his back and holster his pistol so that he might drag himself upwards. The stiff limbs of the dead were his handholds. Rotten cavities provided him places to put his feet. He attained the summit without realizing how he got there. He was suddenly, inexplicably, standing upon a plain. The corpses were gone, replaced by a pavement of closely packed skulls marked with vile runes. Ahead lay his final struggle. Horus the Deceiver stood as vast as a titan over the battlefield. The face of his brother was a mockery of what had been. His charismatic smile had become a cruel leer. Arrogance displayed confidence. Where wisdom had shone in noble eyes, there burned the fell power of ancient evil gods. Dante screwed his eyes shut. "I am not Sanguinius," he said through gritted teeth. "I am Dante. Dante, I will die as Dante. This is my final battle oath. I shall be myself." Horus shivered and became more real. The scene rippled. A corrupted spacecraft wall wavered into being behind him. Dante continued to walk forward, his heavy feet beyond his control. Armored boots clanged on deck plating. He was fated to die here on the vengeful spirit. He had to. For the Emperor's sake, he would allow his death at the hands of his brother. His wings twitched, longing for one final flight. No, that was not right, not right.
I am not Sanguinius, he shouted. I will die as Dante.
He blinked. Horus was gone. The skulls were gone. Poison smoke was being harried to shreds by the gathering desert wind. He saw a light in the sky. A star? The redness of the warp storm seemed to be thinning. He stared dumbly upwards, wondering if the storm was over, until a screaming roar brought his attention back to Earth. 50 yards away was the largest hive tyrant Dante had ever seen. Upon backward-hinged legs it stood taller than a dreadnought. Red spore clouds pumped from the chimneys on its high back. Bonded to its fists were 4 matched bone swords, with heavy ends as square and brutal as cleavers. He had heard of this thing, the galaxy's bane, the hive mind personified. Commander Dante faced the Swarm Lord. His perception coalesced around the monster. Reality reasserted itself, his visions driven off by the sheer physicality of the hive mind. The past gave way to the present. The sounds of battle returned, albeit muted. The horde was broken into pieces. The howling of his blood-mad warriors was scattered, so isolated there could only have been a few of them left. In the monster's eyes glimmered an ancient and powerful intellect. As old as he was, Dante felt like a newborn babe compared to the intelligence staring at him through that unblinking gaze. He sensed that there were 2 beings looking at him, the monster and the being that controlled it. They were separate, yet one. A sense of crushing psychic might emanated from it, so great its grasp encompassed galaxies. There was sophistication there, and terrifying intelligence, but all were outweighed by its bottomless, eternal hunger. For the moment that the man and the monster stared into one another's souls, Dante pitied it. The hunger of a hive mind made the red thirst trivial by comparison. A rumble sounded in the monster's throat. Muscle fibers exposed by gaps in its chitinous armor contracted. That was all the warning Dante received. There was no threat display, no roar to intimidate. It simply hurled itself into the attack. The hive mind was nothing if not efficient. Despite its size, the Swarm Lord moved with staggering speed. Its alien anatomy made its attacks difficult to predict, and Dante found himself fending off a blur of jagged bone. Crystal veins glittered in the blades, generating a shimmering energy field like none Dante was familiar with. The Swarm Lord's weapons met the Ax Mortalis with a thunderous boom. Dante reeled back from the blow, letting out a brief blast from his jump pack to steady himself, dodging narrowly to the right to avoid a return strike from the Swarm Lord's 2 left-hand swords. He ignited his jump pack fully, making a short leap backwards as the swords from the right smashed into the desert where he had been standing. The energy field encasing the blade exploded the sand. As the beast slammed down its weapons, he snapped off a quick shot with a perdition pistol. His aim was honed by centuries of practice. The melter beam cut a roiling line through the air, connecting with the Swarm Lord's lower left elbow joint. An explosion of steam carried the smell of broiled meat out towards Dante, and the thing's arm went limp. It made no cry of pain. As it moved forward, its useless arm snagged on the ground. With a total lack of human emotion, it severed the crippled limb with a sword blow and moved in to re-engage. Dante leapt again, jets on full burn. He swooped low, darting into strike and withdraw. His fuel indicators plummeted, but Dante remained aloft, soaring away from bonesword strikes with expertly timed exhaust bursts. His blows left a dozen smoking scars in the Swarm Lord's carapace. It responded with a buffeting storm of psychically generated terror that had no effect on the Space Marine Lord, so deep in the thirst was he. The thirst grew in Dante until he stood on the brink of a black rage, a pit he could never climb from. He resisted the urge to finally throw himself in. The strength this last surrender would grant him would be formidable, but his mind would be gone for good, and so he would perish. Not until this thing was slain would he abandon his last shreds of self-control. He had to know that it was dead. He focused on his hate, on his desire to kill, on his need to rip this interloper's head from its shoulders and cast it to the sand. The Swarm Lord's armor was thickest on its shoulders, head and back. They dueled for long minutes, Dante landing so many blows that the edge of his fabled axe dulled, and its power unit vented black smoke. All his skill could draw but a little blood. The Swarm Lord snapped and swung at him with undiminished might. Dante needed a decisive blow soon. The Swarm Lord's endurance would outlast his own, and one lucky strike from the beast's weapons could end the fight long before exhaustion set in. So Dante dived in again, axe held low in the manner of a cavalryman stooping in the saddle to strike with his saber. Jinking through swinging bone swords and into the spore cloud issuing from the Swarm Lord's chimneys, he raked the blade of his weapon across the leader beast's face, catching it across one eye. He was momentarily blinded by the swirl of red microorganisms belching from its back and forced to touch down. The two combatants wheeled to face each other. The chitin around the Swarm Lord's right eye was cut down to a gleam of bone. Ichor and humors from its ravaged eye wet its cheek. Dante smiled coldly.
I shall take your other eye, and then I shall kill you.
In return, the leader beast shrieked, a psychic assault that channeled the polyphonous voice of the hive mind into a concentrated mental blow. Dante reeled under the combined sonic-psionic blast. Something gave inside him. He tasted blood at the back of his throat. His mind suffered more than his body, and he staggered back, dazed, his axe dragging through the sand. The Swarm Lord seized the opportunity and ran at the commander again. Dante blasted backwards, but even as it charged, the Swarm Lord assailed Dante with fresh psychic attacks, sending out a lance of psionic energy that cut through his armor into his leg and knocked Dante wheeling from the air. He slammed into the ground with bone-jarring force. His face slammed into his helm, breaking his nose. The terror field halo around Sanguinius's golden mask buckled and gave out in a skittering crawl of psychic energy. His iron halo's energy field failed with a bang. The thing screamed again. Dante's being was deadened from the soul outward. His vision swam. The energy his thirst gave him was stolen away. The Swarm Lord thundered at him, head down, three swords back, ready to strike. Dante regained enough of his wits just in time, activating his jump pack while he was still on his back. The jets sent him scraping across the ancient rock cretan sand of the landing fields at high speed, drawing a power of sparks from his armor. Alarms wailed from every system of his battle plate. A second brain-rattling impact shook him as he connected with a wreck of a land raider. The system's diagnostics for his jump pack wailed at high alert, red danger runes blinking all over his helm plate. With a thought, he jettisoned his jump pack, rolling free of the stuttering jump unit as the Swarm Lord barreled into the tank wreck with such force it lifted from the ground. The Swarm Lord turned on him quickly, grinding Dante's jump pack into a pool of fire and sundered metal under its broad hooves. The land raider slammed back down. More alarms rang in Dante's helm. On standard battle plate, a jump pack took the place of a Space Marine's reactor pack, replicating most of its functions, as well as providing limited flight capability. Without it, Dante was left in a suit of armor with only residual power. He had seconds left of combat effectiveness at the most. Emergency battery icons clamored for his attention, bars sliding quickly down to red emptiness. The Swarm Lord screamed. Psychically induced horror buffeted Dante's mind, tormenting him with dread. Dante roared back, unafraid.
I am the Lord of the Blood,
he said, as he broke into a run, the alarms of his dying armor wailing in his ears. What I do for him who made me. No personal ambition is mine, no glory do I seek, no salvation for my soul or comfort for my body, no fear do I feel. The Swarm Lord swung at Dante hard. Dante retaliated with a counterblow, shattering the bone saber. Thick alien fluids pumped from the broken blade. The eye set into its hilt, rolled madly, and it began to shrill. By his blood was I saved from the selfishness of flesh. The Swarm Lord was unmoved by the death of its symbiotic blade. The stroke continued downward, the remains of the sword catching Dante below his breastplate and penetrating his plastron. A combination of Dante's impetus and the Swarm Lord's immense strength punched the bone fragment deep into his body, penetrating his secondary heart, scraping on his spine, and exiting the other side of his torso. The creature snarled in what would have been triumph in any other species. Dante's formidable progress was arrested. Hissing deeply, the Swarm Lord lifted Commander Dante off the ground, armor and all. Warm blood ran down inside Dante's body glove. Toxins leaked from the Swarm Lord's weapon, sending spiders of agony crawling along his nerves.
By his blood was I elevated.
It was over. He began the Mors Votum. The Swarm Lord lifted him high, screaming in victory, and swung its arm down to flick Dante from the blade's shard so it might finish him on the sand. Reactive foams bubbled from Dante's armor, bonding him firmly to the remnants of the Swarm Lord's blade.
By his blood do I serve.
The beast hesitated. Only for a fraction of a second, but it was enough. As it was raising its remaining two blades to cut Dante in two, the commander raised the petition pistol. His armor died on him, its systems starved of power, growing heavier with every second as his life ran from his body. His aim did not waver.
My life I give to the Emperor, to Sanguinius, and to mankind, he intoned.
The Swarm Lord's face was reflected in the dulled metal of Dante's mask. Sanguinius's face shouted silently at the hive mind. Dante disengaged the weapon's failsafes with a flick of his thumb.
My service is done. I give thanks. My life is finished. I give thanks. Blood returns to blood. Another will take up my burden in my stead. I give thanks.
He fired the petition pistol at point-blank range into the Swarm Lord's face. Its flesh liquefied and boiled off as superheated steam. Its first bone sword bounced from Dante's armor, ripping long scratches into its decoration. Bloodstones fell from their mounts. Still, Dante held his aim true. The pistol's power pack grew so hot with thermal feedback, it blistered his skin through his ceramite. Still, he did not relent. The fusion beam bored through the creature's organic armor. Thermic biogels bled from cavities in the chitin, but they could not stay the petition pistol's beam. The weapon glowed with white heat. The Swarm Lord reared backwards. Its cries became gurgles as its tongue cooked in its head. Desperate to be free of Dante, it severed its own wrist with a clumsy strike. Dante blacked out for a moment from the pain of the bone shard jarring his organs as he hit the floor. When he came to, he was lying on the ground. The Swarm Lord slumped to its knees alongside him. Its movements were feeble. Keening quietly, it fell forward, chest heaving. Air whistled through its breathing spiracles, then ceased. Dante rolled his head to one side. One of the bone swords lay close to his face. The eye set into its hilt, stared hatred at him before dimming. The pupil dilated. The sword, too, was dead. Dante took a painful breath. Fluid bubbled in his lungs. His body ached all over from the Tyranid's poison. He was dying. Dante's rage bled away with his vitae, leaving him with his pain and clear thoughts. The sky was clearing. The red and golden involutions of the warp storm dissipated like smoke, revealing a cold night full of stars. Baal Primus and Baal Secundus pursued their relentless cosmic chase, one falling behind the horizon as the other rose. He noted with satisfaction that the sky was empty of war. There were no ships visible behind the retreating fronds of the storm, only stars and the bright, glowering slash of the red scar. Peace reigned. His breathing hitched. His hearts were slowing. His body was cold. The sword splinter of the Swarm Lord ground against his ribs with each breath. Blood ran from him in a trickle too persistent for his Laramon cells to staunch. As his body failed, his battle plate gave out finally, the helm plate display winking out. His dying armor was a cooling tomb, but he was calm, calmer than he'd been for centuries. This was how 1,500 years of service ended. He had given a score of lifetimes to the Imperium, and he begrudged it not one day. He smiled. He had done his best. By his efforts had the tide of evil been kept from mankind's door a few extra years. That had been his ambition, and he had fulfilled it 100,000 times. Darkness crept into the corner of his eye. He remembered similar times in his life when he had faced death. The first, as he lay dying of thirst in the great salt wastes of his youth on his way to the trials. There had been many other occasions since then, but this was the last. He was sure this was the last. And he was glad. He knew for certain that he was not the golden warrior prophesied in the scrolls of Sanguinius. He wondered in an idle, unconcerned way who the Primarch had meant. For the last 100 years, He had kept himself going with the idea that it was he Sanguinius spoke of, and that he had one final important duty to fulfill. Now it turned out not to be true. How deluded he had been. His blood soaked into the sands of Baal. Dante laughed. Darkness rushed at him. He welcomed it with open arms. Chapter 29. The Great Angel. Dante lost consciousness. The way he jerked awake, breath sharp in his lungs, suggested that his heart had stopped beating for a time. That was the most likely explanation for the lambency which replaced the dark. He was cocooned in the false warmth of death. The pain had gone from his chest. A glorious armored warrior stood over him. His helm was fashioned in Sanguinius's image, the same face Dante himself had worn these long years. 5 months earlier, after Cryptus, Dante had looked into that mask and felt shame. He felt that shame no longer. The Sanguinor had come to him at the end of his service.
"You came,"
he said. His throat was dry, his lips numb. The beautiful voice that had inspired millions was a harsh whisper.
"You came, after all."
The Sanguinor kept its silence, but stood back and flung an arm wide to indicate a greater presence behind it. Dante's breath caught in his chest. Once again he saw the face of Sanguinius, but this was no metal representation. The face was of flesh. The wings that spread either side of his body were white feathers, not cold sculpture. His body was as real as his sorrow. He shone like a desert sun in the full glory of noon, a bringer of light, dangerous in its incandescent power.
"My son," Sanguinius said, "my greatest son."
The Primarch reached out to him. Dante was on his back, but at the same time it was as if he floated in an immense void, and Sanguinius hovered in front of him. And yet, when the Primarch cried, his tears fell forward onto Dante's face. All reality's order was disturbed, but this felt like no dream or vision. When Sanguinius's glowing fingers traced the line of Dante's cheek, they were solid and warm, and they brought into him a sense of peace and holy joy.
"You have suffered greatly for mankind's sake," said Sanguinius. His voice was beautiful. "You have won your rest 1,000 times. Rarely has one man given so much, Louis of Baal Secundus. You have been a light in dark times. I would give you any reward. I would take you to my side. I would free you from strife. I would release you from pain."
"Yes," said Dante, "please. I have served so long. Grant me the freedom of death."
Sanguinius gave Dante a look of profound sorrow. "I cannot. I regret that I can do none of those things. I need you, Dante. Your suffering is not done." Sanguinius gripped Dante's face in both hands. Strength flowed from the Primarch, driving out death's comfort and replacing it with pain. The scene rippled. He heard the shouts of space marines, felt the ghostly touch of living hands upon his armor. Sanguinius faded.
"Please, no!"
Dante cried out.
"My lord, I've done enough. Please, let me rest."
The light was dying. Sanguinius's smile carried with it the sorrows of 10,000 years. Darkness was returning. The great angel disappeared into it, but his glorious voice lingered a moment.
"I am sorry, my son, that you cannot rest. Not yet. Live, my son. Live."
Dante returned to life, screaming for the mercy of death. Hands were all over Dante, holding him down. Sharp pains intruded via his neural shunts.
"No, no, no, no more! Take me with you, I beg you!"
Dante shouted. He lashed out with his fist. Metal hit metal.
"Hold him! Hold him down! He's coming round!"
Dante's vision focused with stubborn slowness, resisting his attempts to see. A sanguinary priest leaned over him, framed against a pre-dawn sky. It was not the pristine heavens of his vision, but nor was it the domain of war. The biovessels of the High Fleet were gone. In their place were thousands of lights, picking out the shapes of hundreds of Imperial ships at low anchor. He had no time to process this sight. His mind buzzed with pain and stimulants. The priest had his right hand pressed hard against Dante's chest. Clear lines ran from his narthecium into the hole in Dante's battle plate, conveying blood and drugs directly into his primary heart. The blade had gone from his body, but the wound was wide open. He could feel the wetness of his exposed organs chilling in the cold of Baal's night.
"For the love of the great angel, hold him down!" shouted the priest.
A face loomed over his.
"Dante, Commander, it is I, Captain Carleon. Calm yourself, please, my lord. You're gravely wounded. Let Albinus do his work."
Dante steeled himself against the agony enough to stop thrashing.
Carleon?
"Yes, my lord," said the captain. He wore power armor instead of his customary terminator plate, and his usual dourness was replaced by happiness. Tears ran freely down his bare face.
"We found you. We have found you." "Good, good," said Albinus to someone at Dante's side.
"That is right. Hold them there. I have repaired the damage to his secondary heart and almost have the wound closed. I have it stapled, but it's too deep for it to shut itself quickly. It requires a little help."
A plasma spike jetted from Albinus's narthesium.
My apologies, Lord Dante. Your battle plate pharmacopoeia is inactive, so this may sting."
In the manner of doctors throughout history, Albinus played down the hurt. Dante roared with pain as Albinus cauterized Dante's wound.
"Steady, steady," Albinus said. His brow knitted with concentration, he played the plasma torch along Dante's chest, liquefying the skin, making it run together. "Nearly there."
Dante bucked involuntarily. His secondary heart restarted to pound alongside his first. His gifts flooded his system with synthetic chemicals, but they could not staunch the pain without the help of his pharmacopoeia. The jet shut off. Albinus sprayed a cooling, healing mist over his wound. The pain receded, leaving a hot throbbing.
"That hurt,"
gasped Dante.
"Will he live?" asked Carleon.
"He will live," said Albinus.
He got up. His white and red armor was covered in blood, much of it Dante's.
"Can he stand?" asked Carleon.
"Yes,"
said Dante. "No," said Albinus at the same time. Dante ignored him, gritted his teeth against the pain, and forced himself upright to discover the world had new surprises for him. Firstly, the body of the giant hive tyrant was being enthusiastically sawn up by a clade of Magos biologians. Secondly, strange space marines stood guard over them. They wore red and gold, and all the colors and trappings of the Blood Angels themselves. Save in one regard, their livery was identical. A pale gray chevron cut through the chapter emblem upon their left pauldron. They were unusually large, being taller and broader than normal Adeptus Astartes, and their armor and weaponry, though of imperial make, were of unfamiliar patterns.
"My lord, you should rest. Wait for a beer. We will take you to the command center," said Albinus. "Lie down. Rest."
Dante shook his head.
"Carleon, how do you come to be here? Who are these warriors?"
He peered closely at the first captain.
"And you? You have aged. What is going on? What is the news from Cadia?"
Albinus thrust a canteen of water at Dante. The commander accepted it and drained it. His thirst was great.
"The answers to these questions are not easy to give. It is best you see, my lord. As for these others, they are like us, yet not like us," said Carleon.
He smiled broadly, the look of a man privy to a profound, joyous, metaphysical truth. "They are a new breed, the saviors of the Imperium."
"These in our colors are not the only ones," said Albinus. "There are others of differing gene lines."
"Differing gene lines? What do you mean?"
One of the strange warriors came forward. He wore Codex Standard Sergeant's insignia. In every superficial way, he was a Blood Angel. He removed his helmet, and Dante found himself looking upon the familiar countenance of a man reworked by Sanguinius's gene seed.
"We are the unnumbered sons of Sanguinius, my lord Dante," said one. "We are Primaris Space Marines, and we have come to your aid."
"Primaris Space Marines? Where have you come from?"
Dante's bewilderment overcame his injuries.
"Whose is that fleet?"
The sergeant looked to Carleon.
"Captain, might I? I could perhaps explain."
"Wait, Anthus," said Carleon.
"I said it is best you see, Lord Commander. It is a wonder words cannot express. We will take you there to see him. Can you walk?"
Dante gave Albinus a defiant look.
"Yes."
Albinus gave a resigned look.
"Very well. Someone bring him a backpack. Let his armor aid him as best it can."
Carleon helped Dante to his feet. An intact reactor unit was retrieved from a corpse and fastened to Dante's armor. Power surged back into it, and the alarms began to toll again. He silenced them.
"This way, my lord Dante," said Sergeant Anthus. "Our lord awaits you."
They led Dante gently by the arm. He limped, his broken armor grinding upon itself. Blood leaked from his wounds, but he would not allow any to help him, and they went slowly because of it. The sky continued to clear, so little of the warp storm's writhings remained. Morning was coming in the pink and blue of Baal's natural hues. Imperial fighters roared through the dawn. Guns pounded far away. Imperial artillery, not the shrieking horrors of the High Fleet, yet it was all dreamy-sounding, quiet as harvesting machinery in the summer distances of an agri-world. The incessant chittering and screeching of the Tyranids had gone, as had the immense mind-flaying pressure of its psychic presence. Instead of a sea of monsters, Dante saw legions of the tall, unfamiliar space marines, many in the colors of his own chapter. The Sons of Sanguinius, Carleon called them. Dante's thinking was confused. The first still nipped at his heels, and his brain was starved by lack of blood. When he looked to his side to see the person helping him, he saw Albinus sometimes, but at other times he saw the Sanguinor, and once his own long-forgotten father, his amber eyes, perfect in a rad-ravaged face. Dante had those eyes himself, the sole reminder that he was another man's son, beside the great angels. "Come on, Lewis," said his father. "Not far now." "Da," said Dante. "Da, is that you? Look at me. Look, I became an angel, Da." "My lord?" His father's face shivered away like a mirage over a desert. Albinus's concerned face replaced it. "My lord, we should stop. You're gravely wounded. Please allow us to help you. Let us carry you." "Give him aid," said Carleon impatiently. "No," commanded Dante. "I will walk. No help, not yet. I must walk." That he did so for penance, he did not say. They took him to a landing zone where fortifications were springing from the sand. Ships screamed down from the sky, depositing wall sections near heavy haulers. Bunkers dropped from orbit came to a stop on screaming jets over their sights, positioning themselves carefully before shutting off their rockets and slamming into place. Thousands of the new space marines were there. This was not a chapter or multiple chapters. These were the legions of old, reborn in new ceramite. Dante staggered against Albinus. Hands grabbed at him.
"You need to rest, my lord," said Albinus again.
"I will not," slurred Dante. "Not until I've seen this miracle for myself."
Wide roads were marked out by barrack blocks. There were thousands upon thousands of men of every kind in the camp. The camp was organized superlatively well, not a prefabricated building out of place, and it was growing rapidly. The center remained the center, no matter how wide the perimeter grew. There was a campaign castellum undergoing the final stages of assembly. From its four corners fluttered large flags of cobalt blue, the Ultimar of Ultramar emblazoned on them in silver thread, its arms embracing the aquila of the Imperium and crowned with a laurel wreath. A familiar insignia, with a new twist. Wonder built upon wonder, standing guard at the top of the stairs leading to the gates, were the gold-armored warriors of the Adeptus Custodes, whom long-lived Dante himself had seen only within the precincts of the Imperial Palace upon Terra. They saluted the approaching party of Blood Angels. The gates whisked open with sharp pneumatic sighs, revealing more honor guard, these Ultramarines veterans. A warrior in the battle place of a captain stepped forward.
"I welcome you to the Castellum, Lord Commander Dante," he said. "Our lord is waiting for you."
"Sicarius," said Dante. "Is that you?"
"It is, my lord. It is good to see you alive," the Ultramarine said. "Are you hurt?"
"Of course he's damned well hurt, Sicarius," snapped Albinus. "Take us to him before the commander collapses."
Sicarius held out his hand apologetically, indicating the way Dante should go. Ultramarines of the old type gave way to tall examples of the new kind. They stamped their feet and stood to attention as Dante wearily limped towards the central command node's armored gates. These opened at his approach. Dante shook off Albinus's arm at the threshold and stepped through as proudly as he could. Upon a throne of pure adamantium, surrounded by hundreds of pristine standards, sat a living miracle, a giant warrior clad in blue and gold, his expression fair yet stern, a massive gauntlet upon one hand, a huge scabbarded sword resting upon his knee. Now he understood the significance of the sword missing from his vision. The sword of the Emperor was there before him, upon the person of a living Primarch. Rabute Gilliman had come to Baal. There was no mistaking it. Dante had seen the Primarch before, shut away in a stasis field in the fortress of Hera on Macragge, where he had sat as second from death for most of the Imperium's history. But here he was, alive and breathing. The Primarch's physical presence hit Dante hard. Gilliman was nobility writ large, a monument in flesh. He was overwhelming. Ignoring the hurts of his healing wounds, Dante fell to his knees with a clatter and dropped his head. Can it really be true? Is it really you? Do you live? The Primarch stood and set his sword aside and came down the steps.
Get up, Dante, said Gilliman gently. I will not accept displays of humility from a man like you. You are one of the few of this era who have earned the right to speak with me on equal terms. Rise. Now.
Dante grunted with pain as he attempted to get to his feet. Gilliman grasped Dante's pauldrons and bodily hauled the chapter master up.
Forgive the indignity, Gilliman said. I see you are hurt.
Dante nodded numbly.
Never kneel before me again. I will have you stand with me as a mark of respect. I will order you not to if I must. I would rather our relationship not function on those terms. I have no time for deference. There is too much to do. Though if your pains are great, you may, of course, sit, he said with a ghost of a smile.
Is this a dream or a vision?
Neither. I live. I have returned to save the Imperium, said Gilliman.
Forgive me, my lord. Dante had to step back to look him in the eye. I failed. I called together all the chapters of the blood and lost them all to save Baal. The Arx Angelicum is in ruins. Thousands of space marines are dead, and Baal is devastated.
Forgive, said Gilliman. There is nothing to forgive, Dante. You stopped them. When we arrived, the High Fleet was greatly depleted and easily destroyed. As we speak, the Indomitus Crusade is scouring this system of the last remnants of the Tyranids. You have achieved what few others have and destroyed a major High Fleet tendril. I would congratulate you, but there is nothing I can say that encompasses the scale of what you've achieved.
Gilliman put a hand on Dante's shoulder.
You have saved Baal from the hive mind, Commander Dante, and with it, the greater part of this segmentum.
At that, Dante wept freely.
I am sorry. I am sorry, he said. I almost lost everything. Please, forgive me.
There is nothing to forgive.
Dante did not hear. Overwhelmed by his hurts and the luminous presence of a living Primarch, he collapsed to the ground.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.